was cause of both that siege and the devastation that had followed. To Card, for the moment at least, it was home.
"You sure know how to pick 'em, Card,"
Gillespie commented, propping his feet up on the edge of the auxiliary comm desk and looking around.
"How did you find this place, anyway?"
"It's all right here in the old records,"
Card told him, watching his display as the decrypt program ran its course. A star map appeared, accompanied by a very short text. Gillespie nodded toward Card's display.
"Klingon's report?"
"Yes,"
Card said, pulling out the data card.
"Such as it is."
"Nothing, right?"
"Pretty much. No indications of clone traffic anywhere on Podaris, Chazwa, or Joyol."
Gillespie dropped his feet off the table and stood up.
"Well, that's that then,"
he said, stepping over to the fruit rack someone had laid out on a side table and picking himself out a dribless fruit.
"Looks like whatever the Empire had going in Oris Sector is dried up, if there was anything going there in the first place."
"Given the lack of a trail, I suspect the latter,"
Card agreed, choosing one of the cards that had come from his contact on Bespin and sliding it into the display.
"Still, it was something we needed to know, one way or the other. Among other things, it frees us up to concentrate on other possibilities."
"Yeah,"
Gillespie said reluctantly as he went back to his seat.
"Well, you know, Card, this whole thing has been kind of strange. Smugglers, I mean, doing this kind of snoop work. Hasn't paid very much, either.
I've already told you we'll be getting some reimbursement from the New Republic."
"Except that we don't have anything to sell them,"
Gillespie pointed out.
"Never known anyone yet who paid for no delivery."
Card frowned over at him. Gillespie had produced a wicked-looking knife from somewhere and was carefully carving a slice from the dribless fruit.
"This isn't about getting paid,"
he reminded the other.
"It's about surviving against the Empire."
"Maybe for you it is,"
Gillespie said, studying the slice of fruit a moment before taking a bite.
"You've got enough sidelines going that you can afford to lay off business for a while. But see, the rest of us have payrolls to meet and ships to keep fueled. The money stops coming in, our employees start getting nasty."
"So you and the others want money?"
He could see Gillespie brace himself.
"I want money. The others want out."
It was not, in retrospect, exactly an unexpected development. The white-hot anger toward the Empire that had been sparked by that attack at the Whistler's Whirlpool was cooling, and the habits of day-to-day business were beginning to reassert themselves.
"The Empire's still dangerous,"
he said.
"Not to us,"
Gillespie said bluntly.
"There hasn't been a single blip of Imperial attention directed toward us since the Whirlpool. They didn't mind us poking around Oris Sector. They didn't even come down on Mazik for that thing at the Bilbringi shipyards."
"So they're ignoring us, despite provocation to do otherwise. Does that make you feel safe?"
Carefully, Gillespie sliced himself off another piece of fruit.
"I don't know," he conceded. "Half the time I think Brask's right. That if we leave the Empire alone, it'll leave us alone. But I can't help thinking about that army of clones Thrawn chased me off Yukio with. I start thinking that maybe he's just too busy with the New Republic to bother with us right now."
Card shook his head.
"Thrawn's never too busy to chase someone down if he wants them,"
he said.
"If he's ignoring us, it's because he knows that's the best way to quiet any opposition. Next stop will probably be to offer us transport contracts and pretend that we're all good friends again."
Gillespie looked at him sharply.
"You've been talking to Parta?"
"No. Why?"
"She told me 2 days ago that she's been offered a contract to bring a bunch of sublight engines to the Imperial shipyards at Ord Trassi."
Card grimaced.
"Has she accepted?"
"Said she was still working out the details. But you know Parta. She's always running right on the edge. Probably can't afford to say no."
Card turned back to his display, the sour taste of defeat in his mouth.
"I suppose I can't really blame her,"
he said.
"What about the others?"
Gillespie shrugged uncomfortably.
Like I said, the money keeps going out. We have to have money coming in, too.
And just like that, the reluctant coalition he tried to put together was falling apart. And the Empire hadn't had to fire a single shot to do it.
Then I suppose I'll just have to go it alone, he said, standing up. Thank you for your assistance. I'm sure you'll want to be getting back to business.
Now don't get all huffy, Card,
Gillespie chided him, taking one last bite of fruit and getting to his feet.
You're right, this clone stuff is serious business. If you want to hire my ships and people for your hunt, we'll be happy to help you out. We just can't afford to do it for free anymore, that's all. Just let us know.
He turned toward the door.
Just a minute,
Card called after him. A rather audacious thought had just occurred to him.
Suppose I find a way to guarantee funding for everyone. Do you think the others would stay aboard, too?
Gillespie eyed him suspiciously.
Don't con me, Card. You don't have that kind of money lying around.
No, but the New Republic does. And under the current situation, I don't think they'd be adverse to having a few more fighting ships on the payroll.
Gillespie shook his head firmly. Sorry, but privateer is a little out of my line.
Even if your duty consists entirely of collecting information?
Card asked.
I'm not talking about anything more than what you were just doing in Oris Sector.
Sounds like a dream assignment, Gillespie said sardonically. Except for the tiny little problem of finding someone in the New Republic stupid enough to pay privateer rates for snoop duty.
Card smiled.
Actually, I wasn't planning to waste their valuable time telling them about it. Have you ever met my associate, Gent?
For a moment, Gillespie just stared at him, looking puzzled. Then abruptly, he got it.
You wouldn't.
Why not? Card countered. On the contrary, we'd be doing them a service. Why clutter their lives with these troublesome accounting details while they're trying to survive a war?
And since they'd have to pay anyway once we found the clone center for them.
Exactly, Card nodded. We can consider this merely a prepayment for work about to be rendered.
Just as well they won't know about it until it's over,
Gillespie said dryly.
Question is, can Gent pull it off?
Easily, Card assured him. Particularly since he's inside the Imperial Palace on Coruscant at the moment. I was planning to head that way soon to pick up Mara anyway. I'll simply have him slice into some Sector Fleet's records and write us in.
Gillespie exhaled noisily.
It's got possibilities, I'll give it that much. Don't know if it'll be enough to get the others back on board, though.
Then we'll just have to ask them,
Card said, stepping back to his desk.
Invitations for, say, 4 days from now?
Gillespie shrugged.
Give it a try. What have you got to lose?
Card sobered.
With Grand Admiral Thrawn,
he reminded the other.
That's not a question to ever ask lightly.
The evening breezes moved through the crumbling walls and stone columns of the ruined fortress, occasionally whistling soft as it found its way through a small hole or crevice. Sitting with his back to one of the pillars, Card sipped at his cup and watched the last sliver of the sun disappear below the horizon. On the plain below, the long shadows stretching across the scarred ground were beginning to fade as the coming darkness of night began its inexorable move across the landscape. All in all, rather symbolic of the way this galactic war had finally caught up with Card himself. He took another sip from his cup, marveling once again at this whole absurd situation. Here he was, an intelligent, calculating, appropriately selfish smuggler who'd made a successful career out of keeping his distance from galactic politics. A smuggler, moreover, who'd sworn explicitly to keep his people out of this particular war. And yet somehow, here he was, squarely in the middle of it. And not only in the middle of it, but trying his best to drag other smugglers in after him. He shook his head in vague annoyance. This exact same thing, he knew, had happened to Han Solo sometime around the Big Yavin battle. He could remember being highly amused by Solo's gradual entanglement in the Rebel Alliance's nets of duty and responsibility. Looking at it from the inside of the net, the whole thing wasn't nearly so entertaining. From across the battered courtyard came the faint sound of crunching gravel. Card turned to look at the line of stone pillars in that direction, his hand dropping to his blaster. No one else was supposed to be here at the moment.
Stern?
He called softly.
Drang?
The familiar cackling purr came in response, and Card let out a quiet sigh of relief.
Over here, he called to the animal. Come on, over here.
The order was unnecessary. The Vornsker was already loping around the pillars toward him, its muzzle low to the ground, the stub of its truncated whip tail wagging madly behind him. Probably Drang, Carr decided. He was the more sociable of the two, and Sturm had a tendency to dawdle over his meals. The Vornsker skidded to a halt beside him, giving another of his strange cackle purrs, a rather mournful one this time, as he pressed his muzzle up into Card's outstretched palm. It was Drang, all right.
Yes, it's very quiet,
Card told him, running his hand up across the animal's face and around to scratch at the sensitive skin behind his ears.
But the others will be back soon. They've just gone out to check on the other ships.
Drang gave another mournful cackle purr and dropped into a half-crouch beside Card's chair, staring alertly out over the empty plain below. But whatever he was looking for, he didn't find it. And after a moment, he growled deep in his throat and lowered his muzzle to rest on the stone. His ears twitched once, as if straining to hear a sound that wasn't there. And then they too folded back down.
It's quiet down there, too,
Card agreed soberly, stroking the Vornsker's fur.
What do you suppose happened here?
Drang didn't answer. Card gazed down at the Vornsker's lean, muscled back, wondering yet again about these strange predators he'd so casually, perhaps even arrogantly, decided to make pets of. Wondering if he'd have thought twice about doing so, if he'd realized that he was dealing with possibly the only animals in the galaxy who hunted via the Force. It was a preposterous conclusion on the face of it. Force sensitivity itself wasn't unheard of, certainly. The Gotal had a fairly useless form of it, and there were persistent rumors about the Dwinyuoguin as well, to name just two. But all those who had such sensitivity were sentient creatures, with the high levels of intelligence and self-awareness that that implied. For non-sentient animals to use the Force this way was something new. But it was a conclusion that the events of the past few months had forced him to. There had been his pet's unexpected reaction to Luke Skywalker at Card's Merker base. There had been the similar and again previously unseen reaction to Mara aboard the Wild Card just before the hunch she'd had that had saved them from that Imperial Interdictor cruiser. There had been the far more vicious reaction of the Wild Vornskers toward both Mara and Skywalker during their 3-day trek through the Merker forests. Skywalker was a Jedi. Mara had shown some decidedly Jedi-like talents. And perhaps even more telling, the existence of the bizarre force-empty bubbles created by Merker's Issel Amari could finally be explained if they were simply a form of defense or camouflage against predators. Abruptly, Drang's head snapped up, his ears stiffening as he twisted halfway around. Card strained his ears, and a few seconds later, he heard the faint sounds of the returning shuttle.
It's all right,
he assured the Vornsker.
It's just Chin and the others back from the ship.
Drang held the pose a moment longer. Then, as if deciding to take Card's word for it, he turned and laid his head back down again, looking out over a plain that, if Card's suspicion was right, was more silent even for him than it was for Card.
Don't worry,
he soothed the animal, scratching again behind his ears.
We'll be out of here soon, and I promise that the next place we go to will have plenty of other life around for you to listen to.
The Vornsker's ears twitched, but that might have been just the scratching. Taking one last look at the fading colors of sunset, Card stood up, resettling his gun belt across his hips. There was no particular reason to go in yet, of course. The invitations had been written, encrypted, and transmitted, and for now, there was nothing to do except wait for the replies. But suddenly, it felt lonely out here. Much lonelier than it had a few minutes ago.
"Come on, Drang," he said, reaching down for one last pat. "Time to go in."
The shuttle settled to the floor of the Chimera's hangar bay, release valves hissing over the heads of the stormtroopers moving purposefully into escort position around the lowering ramp. Pelion stayed where he was beside Thrawn, grimacing at the smell of the skid gases and wishing he knew what in the Empire the Grand Admiral was up to this time. Whatever it was, he had a bad feeling that he wasn't going to like it. Thrawn could talk all he liked about how predictable these smugglers were. And maybe to him they were. But Pelion had had his own share of dealings with this sort of fringe scum, and he'd never yet seen a deal that hadn't gone sour one way or the other. And none of those deals had started from the sheer audacity of an attack on an Imperial shipyard. The ramp finished its descent and locked in place. The stormtrooper commander peered up into the shuttle and nodded. And flanked by two black-clad fleet troopers, the prisoner descended to the deck.
"Ah, Captain Mazik,"
Thrawn said smoothly as the stormtroopers fell into escort positions around him.
"Welcome to the Chimera. I apologize for this rather theatrical summons and any problems it may have created in your business scheduling. But there are certain matters that cannot be discussed other than face to face."
"You're very funny," Mazik snarled.
A marked contrast, Pelion thought, to the suave, sophisticated ladies' man that had been profiled in intelligence files. But then the knowledge that one was facing an Imperial interrogation was enough to strip the civilized polish from any man.
"How did you find me?"
"Come now, Captain," Thrawn admonished him calmly. "Did you seriously think you could hide from me if I wanted you found?"
"Guard managed it,"
Mazik shot back, trying hard to put up a good front, but the manacled hands were working nervously at each other.
"You still haven't got him, have you?"
"Card's time will come," Thrawn told him, his voice still calm but noticeably cooler. "But we're not talking about Card. We're talking about you."
"Yes, and I'm sure you're looking forward to it," Mazik growled, waving his manacled hands. "Let's get it over with."
Thrawn's eyebrows lifted slightly.
"You misunderstand, Captain. You're not here for punishment. You're here because I wanted to clear the air between us."
Mazik paused in mid-bluster.
"What are you talking about?"
he asked suspiciously.
"I'm talking about the recent incident at the Bilbringi shipyards," Thrawn said. "No, don't deny it. I know it was you and Elor who destroyed that unfinished Star Destroyer. And normally the Empire would exact an extremely high price for such an act. However, under these particular circumstances, I'm prepared to let it go."
Mazik stared at him.
"I don't understand."
"It's very simple, Captain."
Thrawn gestured, and one of Mazik's escorts began removing his restraints.
"Your attack on Bilbringi was in revenge for a similar attack against a smuggler's meeting you attended on Trogon. All well and good. Except that neither I nor any senior Imperial officer authorized that attack. In fact, the garrison commander had explicit orders to leave your meeting alone."
Mazik snorted.
"You expect me to believe that?"
Thrawn's eyes glittered.
"Would you rather believe I was so incompetent that I allowed an inadequate field force to be sent on a mission?"
he bit out. Mazik eyed him, still hostile, but starting to look a little thoughtful as well.
"I always thought we got away too easily,"
he muttered.
"Then we understand each other," Thrawn said, his voice calm again. "And the matter is settled. The shuttle has orders to take you back to your base."
He smiled faintly.
"Or rather to the backup base your ship and crew will have fled to by now on Lelmra. Again, my apologies for the inconvenience."
Mazik's eyes darted around the hangar bay, his expression halfway between suspicion that this was a trick and an almost painfully eager hope that it wasn't.
"And I'm just supposed to believe you?"
he demanded.
You're welcome to believe anything you wish, Thrawn said. But remember that I had you in my hand, and that I let you go. Good day, Captain. He started to turn away.
So who were they? Mazik called after him. If they weren't Imperial troops, I mean.
Thrawn turned back to face him. They were indeed Imperial troops, he said. Our inquiries are still incomplete, but at the moment it appears that Lieutenant Kosk and his men were attempting to make a little extra money on the side.
Mazik stared.
Someone hired them to hit us? Imperial troops?
Even Imperial troops are not always immune to the lure of bribery, Thrawn said, his voice dark with an excellent imitation of bitter contempt. In this case, they paid for their treason with their lives. Be assured that the person or persons responsible will pay a similar price.
You know who it was?
Mazik demanded. I believe I know, Thrawn said. As yet I have no proof.
Give me a hint.
Thrawn smiled sardonically. Form your own hints, Captain. Good day. He turned and strode back toward the archway leading to the service and prep areas. Pelion waited long enough to watch Mazik and his escort turn and start back up into the shuttle, then hurried to join him.
Do you think you gave him enough, Admiral?
He asked quietly.
It won't matter, Captain, Thrawn assured him. We've given him all that's necessary. And if Mazik himself isn't clever enough to finger Card, one of the other smuggler chiefs will be. In any case, it's always better to offer too little rather than too much. Some people automatically distrust free information.
Behind them, the shuttle lifted from the deck and swung back around into space. And from the archway ahead, a grinning figure emerged.
Nicely done, Admiral,
Niles Ferrier said, shifting his cigar to the other side of his mouth.
You got him all squirmy and then tossed him back. He'll be thinking about that for a long time.
Thank you, Ferrier, Thrawn said dryly. Your approval means so very much to me. For a second, the ship thief's grin seemed to slip. Then, apparently, he decided to take the comment at face value.
Okay, he said. So what's our next move?
Thrawn's eyes flashed at the hour, but he let it go. Card sent out a series of transmissions last night, one of which we intercepted, he said. We're still decrypting it, but it can only be a call for another meeting. Once we have the location and time, they'll be provided to you.
And I'll go and help Mazik finger Card,
Ferrier nodded. You'll do nothing of the sort, Thrawn said sharply. You will sit in a corner and keep your mouth shut. Ferrier seemed to shrink back.
Okay, sure.
Thrawn held his gaze another moment. What you will do, he continued at last, is to make certain that a certain data card is placed into Card's possession, preferably in the office aboard his ship. That will be where Mazik will probably look first. He motioned, and an officer stepped forward and handed Ferrier a data card.
Ah,
Ferrier said slyly as he took it.
Yeah, I get it. The record of Card's deal with this Lieutenant Kosk, huh?
Correct, Thrawn said. That plus the supporting evidence we've already inserted into Kosk's own personal records should leave no doubt that Card has been manipulating the other smugglers. I expect that to be more than adequate.
Yeah, they're a pretty nasty bunch, all right.
Ferrier turned the data card over in his hand, chewing on his cigar.
Okay, so all I gotta do is get aboard the wild card.
He broke off at the look on Thrawn's face.
No,
the Grand Admiral said quietly. On the contrary, you'll stay as far away from his ship and private ground facilities as possible. In fact, you will never allow yourself to be alone while you're at his base. Ferrier blinked in surprise.
Yeah, but...
Helplessly, he held up the data card. Beside him, Pelion felt Thrawn's sigh of strained patience.
Your Defel will be the one to plant the data card aboard the wild card.
Ferrier's face cleared.
Oh,
Yeah. He can probably slip in and out without anyone even noticing.
He had better, Thrawn warned, and suddenly his voice was icy cold. Because I haven't forgotten your role in the deaths of Lieutenant Kosk and his men. You owe the Empire, Ferrier, and that debt will be paid. Behind his beard, Ferrier's face had gone a little pale.
I got it, Admiral.
Good, Thrawn said. You'll remain on your ship until Decrypt obtains the location of Card's meeting for you. After that, you'll be on your own.
Sure,
Ferrier said, stuffing the data card into his tunic.
So after they take care of Card, what do I do?
You'll be free to go about your business, Thrawn said. When I want you again, I'll let you know. Ferrier's lip twitched.
Sure,
he repeated, and on his face, Pellion saw that he was slowly starting to realize just how deep his debt to the Empire really was.
Chapter 16.
The planet was green and blue and mottled white, pretty much like all the other planets Han had dropped in on over the years, with the minor exception that this one didn't have a name, or spaceports, or orbit facilities, or cities, power plants, or other ships, or much of anything else.
That's it, huh?
He asked Mara. She didn't answer. Han looked over and found her staring at the planet hanging out there in front of them.
Well, is it or isn't it?
He prompted.
It is, she said, her voice strangely hollow. We're here.
Good, Han said, still frowning at her. Great. You gonna tell us where this mountain is? Or are we just gonna fly around and see where we draw fire from?
Mara seemed to shake herself.
It's about halfway between the equator and the North Pole, she said. Near the eastern edge of the main continent. A single mountain rising out of forest and grassland.
Okay,
Han said, feeding in the information and hoping the sensors wouldn't loop out and fail on him. Mara had made enough snide comments about the Falcon as it was. Behind him, the cockpit door slid open, and Lando and Chewbacca came in.
How about it? Lando asked. We there?
We're there,
Mara said, before Han could answer. Chewbacca rumbled a question.
No, seems to be a real low-tech place.
Han shook his head.
No power sources or transmissions anywhere.
Military bases? Lando asked.
If they're there, I can't find them,
Han said.
Interesting, Lando murmured, peering over Mara's shoulder. I wouldn't have pegged the Grand Admiral as being the trusting sort.
The place was designed to be a private storehouse, Mara reminded him tartly. Not a display ad for Imperial hardware. There weren't any garrisons or command centers scattered around for Thrawn to have moved into.
So whatever he's got will be stashed inside the mountain?
Han asked.
Plus probably a few ground patrols just outside, Mara said. But they won't have any fighter squadrons or heavy weaponry to throw at us.
That'll be a nice change, Lando said wryly.
Unless Thrawn decided to put up a couple of garrisons on his own,
Han pointed out.
You and Chewie'd better charge up the quads, just in case.
Right.
The two of them left. Han shifted into a general approach vector, then keyed for a sensor search.
Trouble? Mara asked.
Probably not,
Han assured her, watching the displays. But there was nothing showing anywhere around them.
A couple of times on the way in, I thought I spotted something hanging around back there.
Calrissian thought he saw something when we changed course at Abroa Sky, too, Mara said, peering down at the display. Could be something with a really good sensor stealth mode.
Or just a glitch, Han said. The Fabertech's been giving us trouble lately.
Mara craned her neck to look out to starboard.
Could someone have followed us here from Coruscant?
Who knew we were coming?
Han countered. No, there was nothing there. Must have been his imagination.
How much of this private storehouse did you see?
Slowly, Mara turned back to face forward, not looking all that convinced.
Not much more than the route between the entrance and the throne room at the top, she said. But I know where the Spa-Arti cylinder chamber is.
How about the power generators?
I never actually saw them, she said. But I remember hearing that the cooling system pulls in water from a river flowing down the northeastern slope of the mountain. They're probably somewhere on that side.
Han chewed at his lip.
And the main entrance is on the southwest side.
The only entrance, she corrected. There's just the one way in or out.
I've heard that before.
This time it's true, she retorted.
Han shrugged.
Okay,
he said. There was no point in arguing about it. Not until they'd looked the place over, anyway.
The cockpit door slid open, and he glanced over his shoulder to see Luke come in.
We're here, kid,
he said.
I know, Luke said,
moving forward to stand behind Mara.
Mara told me.
Han threw a look at Mara. Near as he could tell, she'd spent the whole trip avoiding Luke, which wasn't all that easy on a ship the size of the Falcon. Luke had returned the favor by staying out of her way, which wasn't much easier.
She did, huh?
It's all right,
Luke assured him, gazing out at the planet ahead.
So that's Wayland.
That's Wayland,
Mara said shortly, unstrapping and brushing past Luke.
I'll be in back,
she said over her shoulder and left.
You two work so well together,
Han commented as the cockpit door slid shut behind her.
Actually, we do,
Luke said, sliding into the co-pilot seat Mara had just vacated.
You should have seen us aboard the Chimera when we went in to rescue Card. She's a good person to have at your side.
Han threw him a sideways look.
Except when she wants to slide a knife in it.
I'm willing to take my chances, Luke smiled. Must be one of those crazy Jedi things.
This isn't funny, Luke,
Han growled.
She hasn't given up on killing you, you know. She told Leia that back on Coruscant.
Which tells me that she really doesn't want to do it, Luke countered. People don't usually go around announcing murder plans in advance. Especially not to the victim's family.
You willing to bet your life on that?
Luke shrugged fractionally.
I already have.
The Falcon was skimming along the outer atmosphere now, and the computer had finally identified a probable location for Mount Tantus.
Well, if you ask me, this isn't a good time to be running short odds,
he told Luke, giving the sensor map a quick study. A straight-in southern approach, he decided. That would give them forest cover for both the landing and the overland trip.
You have any suggestions?
Luke asked.
Yeah, I've got one,
Han said, changing course toward the distant mountain.
We leave her with the Falcon at the landing site.
Alive?
At other times in his life, Han reflected, it wouldn't necessarily have been a ridiculous question.
Of course alive, he said stiffly. There are a lot of ways to keep her from getting into trouble.
You really think she'd agree to stay behind?
No one said we had to ask her.
Luke shook his head.
We can't do that, Han. She needs to see this through.
Which part of it?
Han growled.
Hitting the clone factory or trying to kill you?
I don't know, Luke said quietly. Maybe both.
Han had never liked forests very much before joining the Rebel Alliance, which wasn't to say he disliked them either. Forests were simply not something the average smuggler thought about very much. Most of the time you picked up and delivered in grimy little spaceports like Mos Eisley or Abrogato Rey. And on the rare occasion where you met in a forest, you let the customer watch the forest while you watched the customer. As a result, Han had wound up with a vague sort of assumption that one forest was pretty much like another. His stint with the Alliance had changed all that. What with Endor, Corstris, Fedji, and a dozen more, he'd learned the hard way that each forest was different, with its own array of plants, animal life, and general all-around headaches for the casual visitor. Just one of many subjects the Alliance had taught him more about than he'd really wanted to know. Wayland's forest fit the pattern perfectly, and the first headache proved to be how to get the Falcon down through the dense upper leaf canopy without leaving a hole any wandering Imperial TIE pilot would have to be asleep to miss. They'd first had to find a gap, in this case made by a fallen tree, and then he'd had to basically run the ship in on its side. A lot trickier maneuver in a planetary gravity well than it was out in an asteroid field. The secondary canopy, which he didn't find out about until he was most of the way through the first, was the second headache. And he tore the tops off a line of those shorter trees before he got the Falcon stabilized and down, crunching a lot of underbrush in the process.
Nice landing, Lando commented dryly, rubbing his shoulder beneath the restraint strap as Han shut down the repulsor lifts.
At least the sensor dish is still there,
Han said pointedly. Lando winced.
You're never gonna let that go, are you?
Han shrugged, keying in the lifeform algorithms. Time to find out what was out there.
You said you wouldn't get a scratch on her,
he reminded the other.
Fine, Lando grumped. Next time I'll destroy the energy field generator, and you can fly her down the Death Star's throat.
Which wasn't all that funny. If the Empire got enough of its old resources back again, Thrawn just might try to build another of the blasted things.
We're ready back here, Luke said, poking his head into the cockpit. How's it look?
Not too bad,
Han said, reading off the display.
Got a bunch of animals out there, but they're keeping their distance.
How big are these animals?
Lando asked, leaning over Han's shoulder to have a look at the display.
And how many to a bunch? Luke added.
About 15, Han told him. Nothing we can't handle if we need to. Let's go take a look.
Mara and Chewbacca were waiting at the hatchway with R2 and 3PO, the latter keeping his mouth shut for a change.
Chewie and me will go first, Han told them, drawing his blaster. The rest of you stay sharp up here.
He punched the controls, and the hatchway slid open as the entry ramp lowered, settling into the dead leaves with a muffled crunch. Trying to watch all directions at once, Han started down. He spotted the first of the animals before he'd reached the bottom of the ramp. Gray, with a freckling of white across its back, maybe 2 meters from nose to tail tuft. It was crouched at the base of a tree limb, its beady little eyes following him as he walked. And if its teeth and claws were anything to go by, it was definitely a predator. Beside him, Chewbacca rumbled softly.
Yeah, I see it,
Han muttered back.
There are another 14 out there somewhere, too.
The Wookiee growled again, gesturing.
You're right,
Han agreed slowly, eyeing the predator.
It does look kind of familiar. Like those Panthak things from Mantessa, maybe?
Chewbacca considered, then growled a negative.
Well, we'll figure it out later,
Han decided.
Luke!
Right here.
Luke's voice came down from the hatchway.
You and Mara start bringing the equipment down,
Han ordered, watching the predator closely. The sound of conversation didn't seem to be bothering it any.
Start with the speeder bikes. Lando, you're high cover. Stay sharp.
Right, Lando said.
From above came a handful of pops and clicks as the transport restraints around the first two speeder bikes were knocked off, then the faint hum as the repulsor lifts were activated. And with a sudden violent crackling of leaves and branches, the predator leaped.
Chewie!
Was all Han had time to shout before the animal was on top of him. He fired, the blaster bolt catching it square in the torso, and managed to duck as the carcass shot past his head. Chewbacca was roaring Wookiee battle cries, swinging his bowcaster around and firing again and again, as more of the predators charged at them from out of the trees. From the hatchway, someone shouted something, and another shot flashed out. And out of the corner of his eye, moving much too fast to avoid, Han saw a set of claws coming in his direction. He threw up his forearm across his face, ducking his head back as far out of the way as he could. An instant later, he was knocked back off his feet as the predator slammed full tilt into him. A moment of pressure and lancing pain as the claws dug through his camouflage jacket. And then, suddenly, the weight was gone. He lowered his arm just in time to see the predator bound onto the ramp and prepare for a spring into the Falcon. He twisted around and fired, just as a shot from inside the ship also caught it. Chewbacca snarled a warning. Still on his back, Han swung around to see 3 more of the animals bounding across the ground toward him. He dropped one with a pair of quick shots. He was trying to swing his blaster around to target the second when a pair of black-booted feet hit the ground just in front of him. The animals leaped upward into a blurred line of brilliant green
and crashed to the ground. Rolling over, Han scrambled back to his feet and looked around. Luke was standing in a half-crouch in front of him, lightsaber humming in ready position. On the other side of the ramp, Chewbacca was still on his feet, with three of the speckled animals lying dead around him. Han looked down at the dead predator beside him. Now that he had a good, close look at the thing...
Watch out! There are three more over there!
Luke warned. Han looked. Two of the animals were visible, crouched low in the trees.
They won't bother us. Any of them get into the ship?
Not very far into it, Luke told him. What did you do that set them off?
We didn't do anything,
Han said, holstering his blaster.
It was you and Mara turning on the speeder bikes.
Chewbacca rumbled with sudden recognition.
You got it, pal, Han nodded. That's where we tangled with them, all right.
What are they?
Luke asked.
They're called Garrels,
Mara said from the ramp, crouching down, her own blaster still drawn. She was peering at the carcasses scattered around Chewbacca.
The Empire used to use them as watchdogs, usually near heavily wooded frontier garrisons where probe droid pickets weren't practical. There's something in the ultrasonic signature of a repulsor lift that's supposed to sound like one of their prey animals. Draws them like a magnet. So that's why they were sitting here waiting for us,
Luke said, closing down his lightsaber, but keeping it handy.
They can hear a ship-sized repulsor lift coming in from kilometers away,
Mara said. Jumping down off the side of the ramp, she dropped to one knee beside one of the dead Garrels and dug her free hand into the fur at its neck.
Which means that if they've been radio-tagged, the controllers in Mount Tantus know we're here.
Great,
Han muttered, crouching down beside the dead Garrel at his feet.
What do we look for, a collar?
Probably,
Mara said.
Check around the legs, too.
It took a few anxious minutes, but in the end, they confirmed that none of the dead predators had been tagged.
Must be descendants of the group they brought in to protect the mountain,
Lando said.
Or else this is where they came from originally,
Mara said.
I never saw their home planet listed.
It's trouble either way,
Han said, shoving the last carcass off the Falcon's ramp to crunch into the leaf cover below.
If we can use speeder bikes, it means we're walking.
From up above came a low electronic whistle.
Pardon me, sir. Does that also apply to R2 and me?
Unless you've learned how to fly, Han said.
Well, sir, it occurs to me that R2 in particular isn't really equipped for this sort of forest travel. If the cargo plat can't be used, perhaps other arrangements can be made.
The arrangement is that you walk like the rest of us,
Han said shortly. Getting into a long discussion with 3PO wasn't how he'd been planning to spend his day.
You did it on Endor, you can do it here.
We didn't have nearly as far to go on Endor, Luke reminded him quietly.
We must be about 2 weeks' walk from the mountain here.
It's not that bad,
Han said, doing a quick estimate. It wasn't that bad, but it was bad enough.
8 or 9 days, tops. Maybe a couple more if we run into trouble.
Oh, we'll run into trouble, all right,
Mara said sourly, sitting down on the ramp and dropping her blaster into her lap.
Trust me on that one.
You don't expect the natives to be hospitable?
Lando asked.
I expect them to welcome us with open crossbows,
Mara retorted.
There are two different native species here, the Pasadans and the Minurshi. Neither of them had any great love of humans even before the Empire moved in on Mount Tantus.
Well, at least they won't be on the Empire's side,
Lando said.
That's not likely to be a lot of comfort, Mara growled. And whatever trouble they don't give us, the usual range of predators will. We'll be lucky to make it in 12 or 13 days, not 8 or 9.
Han looked out at the forest, and as he did, something caught his eye. Something more than a little disturbing.
So we'll figure on 12, he said.
Suddenly it was critical that they make tracks away from here.
Let's get to it. Lando, Mara, you get the equipment pack sorted out for carrying. Chewie, go pull all the ration boxes out of the survival packs. That ought to do us for extra food. Luke, you and the droids head that way,
he pointed.
And see what you can find in the way of a path. Maybe a dry creek bed. You ought to be close enough to the mountain to have some of those around.
Certainly, sir,
3PO said brightly,
starting down the ramp.
Come, R2.
There was a muttering of acknowledgement, and the others headed into the ship. Han started toward the ramp, stopped as Luke put a hand on his arm.
What's wrong?
He asked quietly. Han jerked his head back toward the forest.
Those girls that were watching us. They're gone.
Luke looked back.
Did they all leave together?
I don't know. I didn't see them go.
Luke fingered his lightsaber.
You think it's an Imperial patrol?
Or else a flock of those prey animals Mara mentioned. You get anything?
Luke took a deep breath, held it a moment, then slowly let it out.
I don't sense anyone else nearby, he said. But they could just be out of range. You think we should abort the mission?
Han shook his head.
If we do, we'll lose our best shot at the place. Once they know we found their clone factory, there won't be any point in pretending they're just some overlooked backwoods system anymore. By the time we got back with a strike force, they'd have a couple of Star Destroyer fleets waiting for us.
Luke grimaced.
I suppose so. And you're right. If they track the Falcon in, the sooner we get away from it, the better. Are you going to send the coordinates back to Coruscant before we go?
I don't know.
Han looked up at the Falcon looming above him, trying not to think about the Imperials getting their grubby little hands on it again.
If that's a patrol out there, we'll never get the transmitter turned tight enough to slide a message past them. Not the way it's been acting up lately.
Luke glanced up too.
Sounds risky, he said. If we get into trouble, they won't have any idea where to send a follow-up strike force.
Yeah, well, if we transmit through an Imperial patrol, I can guarantee that trouble, Han growled. I'm open to suggestions.
How about if I stay behind for a few hours? Luke suggested. If no patrols have shown up by then, it should be safe to transmit.
Forget it, Han shook his head. You'd have to travel alone, and there's a better than even chance you wouldn't even be able to find us.
I'm willing to risk it.
I'm not, Han said bluntly. And besides, every time you go off alone, you wind up getting me in trouble.
Luke smiled ruefully.
It does seem that way sometimes.
Bet on it, Han told him. Come on, we're wasting time. Get out there and find us a path.
All right,
Luke said with a sigh. But he didn't sound all that upset. Maybe he'd known all along that it wasn't a very smart idea.
Come on, 3PO, R2. Let's go.
The first hour was the hardest. The vague, path-like trail R2 had found dead-ended into a mass of thorn bushes after less than 100 meters, forcing them to push a path of their own through the dense undergrowth. In the process, they disturbed more than plant life, and wound up spending several tense minutes shooting at a nest of 6-legged, half-meter-long creatures that swarmed out, biting and clawing at them. Fortunately, the claws and teeth were designed for much smaller game. And aside from a nicely matched set of tooth dents in 3PO's left leg, no one suffered any damage before they could be driven away. 3PO moaned more about that than either the incident or the damage really deserved. The noise possibly attracting the brown-scaled animal that attacked a few minutes later. Han's quick blaster shot failed to stop the animal, and Luke had to use his lightsaber to cut it off 3PO's arm. The droid was even more inclined to moan after that. And Han was threatening to shut him down and leave him for scavengers when they unexpectedly hit one of the dry creek beds they'd been hoping to find. With the easier terrain, and with no further animal attacks to slow them down, they made much better speed. And by the time the leaf canopy overhead began to darken with nightfall, they'd made nearly 10 kilometers.
Brings back such wonderful memories, doesn't it?
Mara commented sarcastically, as she got out of her backpack and dropped it beside one of the small bushes lining the creek bed.
Just like back on Merkur,
Luke agreed, using his lightsaber to cut away another of the thorn bushes they'd become all too familiar with in the past few hours.
You know, I never did find out what happened after we left.
About what you'd expect, Mara told him. We cleared out about 2 steps ahead of Thrawn's AT-ATs, and then nearly got caught anyway when Card insisted on hanging around to watch.
Is that why you're helping us? He asked her. Because Thrawn's put a death mark on Card?
Let's get one thing clear right now, Skywalker, she growled. I work for Card, and Card has already said that we're staying neutral in this war of yours. The only reason I'm here is because I know a little about the Clone Wars era, and don't want to see a bunch of cold-faced duplicates trying to overrun the galaxy again. The only reason you're here is that I can't shut the place down by myself.
I understand, Luke said, cutting a second thorn bush and closing down his lightsaber. Reaching out with the Force, he lifted the two bushes off the ground and lowered them into the creek bed. Well, it won't stop anything that's really determined to get at us, he decided, studying the makeshift barrier. But it should at least slow them down.
For whatever that's worth,
Mara said, pulling out a ration bar and stripping off the wrapping.
Let's just hope this isn't one of those lucky places where all the really big predators come out at night.
Hopefully R2's sensors can spot them before they get too close, Luke told her. Igniting his lightsaber again, he cut two more thorn bushes for good measure. And he was preparing to shut it down when he caught the subtle change in Mara's sense. He turned to find her staring at his lightsaber, ration bar forgotten in her hand, a strangely haunted expression on her face. Mara, he asked, you all right? Her gaze shifted almost guiltily away from him.
Sure,
she muttered.
I'm fine.
Throwing him a quick glare, she bit viciously into her ration bar. Okay. Closing down the lightsaber, Luke used the Force to move the newly cut thorn bushes into place on top of the others. Still not much of a barrier, he decided. Maybe if he stretched a few of those vines between the trees.
Skywalker.
He turned. Yes. Mara was looking up at him.
I have to ask,
she said quietly.
You're the only one who knows. How did the Emperor die?
For a moment, Luke studied her face. Even in the fading light, he could see the ache in her eyes. The bitter memories of the luxuriant life and glittering future that had been snatched away from her at Endor. But alongside the ache was an equally strong determination. However badly this might hurt, she truly did want to hear it. The Emperor was trying to turn me to the dark side, he told her, long buried memories of his own surging painfully back again. It had nearly been him, not the Emperor, who died that day. He almost succeeded. I'd taken one swing at him and wound up fighting with Vader instead. I guess he thought that if I killed Vader in anger, I'd be open to him through the dark side.
And so instead you ganged up on him,
she accused, her eyes flashing with sudden anger.
You turned on him, both of you.
Wait a minute, Luke protested. I didn't attack him. Not after that first swing.
What are you talking about?
She demanded.
I saw you do it. Both of you moved in against him with your lightsabers. I saw you do it.
Luke stared at her, and suddenly he understood. Mara Jade, the Emperor's hand, who could hear his voice from anywhere in the galaxy. She'd been in contact with her master at the moment of his death, and had seen it all. Except that, somehow, she'd gotten it wrong. I didn't move against him, Mara, he told her. He was about to kill me when Vader picked him up and threw him down an open shaft. I couldn't have done anything even if I'd wanted to. I was still half paralyzed from the lightning bolts he'd hit me with.
What do you mean, if you'd wanted to?
Mara said scornfully.
That was the whole reason you went aboard the Death Star in the first place, wasn't it?
Luke shook his head. No. I went there to try and turn Vader away from the dark side. Mara turned away, and Luke could sense the turmoil within her.
Why should I believe you?
She demanded at last.
Why should I lie?
He countered. It doesn't change the fact that if I hadn't been there, Vader wouldn't have turned on him. In that sense, I'm probably still responsible for his death.
That's right! You are!
Mara agreed harshly,
but there was a moment of hesitation before she said it.
Then I won't forget it.
Luke nodded silently and waited for her to say more. But she didn't, and after a minute, he turned back to the thorn bushes.
I'd go easy on those things if I were you,
Mara said from behind him, her voice cool and under control again.
You don't want to trap us in an area this size if something big comes over the bushes.
Good point, Luke said, understanding both the words and the meaning beneath them. There was a job to do, and until that job was finished, she still needed Luke alive, at which point she would have to face the destiny that had been prepared for her, or would have to choose a new one. Closing down his lightsaber, he stepped past Mara to where the others were busy setting up camp. Time to check on the droids.
Chapter 17.
The door to the assemblage chamber slid open, and a small flood of beings and droids began pouring out into the grand corridor, chattering among themselves in the usual spectrum of different languages. Glancing at Winter as the two of them walked toward the crowd,
Leia nodded. It was showtime.
Anything else come in that I should know about? She asked as they passed along the edge of the flow.
There was an unusual follow-up to the Pantolomon report,
Winter said, her eyes flicking casually around the crowd.
A bounty hunter there claims to have penetrated the Imperial shipyards at Ord Tracy and is offering to sell us information about their new building program.
I've dealt with my share of bounty hunters,
Leia said, trying not to look around the crowd as they passed through it.
Winter was watching, and with her perfect memory, she would remember everyone who was close enough to overhear their conversation. What makes Colonel Darlin think we can trust him?
He's not sure we can,
Winter said.
The smuggler offered what he said was a free sample. The information that there are 3 Imperial Star Destroyers within a month of completion out there. Colonel Darlin said Wing Commander Harleys is drawing up a plan to confirm that.
They were out of the Grand Corridor now, following along with the handful of beings who hadn't yet split off toward offices or other conference rooms.
Sounds dangerous,
Leia said, dutifully running their prepared script out to the end.
I hope he's not just going to do a flyby.
The report didn't give any details,
Winter said.
But there was an addendum asking about the possibility of borrowing a freighter from someone who does business with the Empire.
The last of the officials turned off into a cross corridor, leaving them alone in the hallway, with an assortment of techs, assistants, admin personnel, and other low-ranking members of the New Republic government. Leia threw a quick glance at each, decided there was no point in going through another script for their benefit. Looking at Winter, she nodded again, and together the two women headed toward the turbolifts. They needed some place where Ghent could set up shop without word or even rumors of the project leaking out, and a search of the palace's original blueprints had found them the ideal spot. It was an old backup power cell room, closed down and sealed years earlier, wedged in between the Sector Ordnance/Supply and Starfighter Command offices down on the command floor. Leia had cut a new entrance from a service corridor with her lightsaber. Bel Iblis had helped them run power cables and data lines, and Ghent had set up his decrypting program. They had everything they needed, except results. Ghent was sitting in the room's single chair when they arrived, staring dreamily off into space with his feet propped up on the edge of his decryptor desk. They were both inside, and Winter had closed the door before he even noticed their presence.
Oh, hi,
he said, dropping his feet to the floor with a muffled thud.
Not so loud, please,
Leia reminded him, wincing. The officers working on the other sides of the thin walls would probably ascribe any stray noises to the adjacent offices. But then again, they might not.
Has General Bel Iblis brought the latest transmission in yet?
She asked.
Yeah, about an hour ago.
Ghent nodded, whispering almost inaudibly now.
I just finished slicing them.
He tapped a key, and a series of decrypted messages came up on the display. Leia stepped up behind his chair, reading down them. details of upcoming military deployments, what seemed to be verbatim transcriptions of high-level diplomatic conversations, tidbits of idle palace gossip. As always, Delta Source had covered the whole